Good morning, everybody. Welcome to a gorgeous Seahawks Saturday here as we get to kind of continue charging toward the summer months up here in the Pacific Northwest, as well as in Canada. You guys still get summer same time we do. And we get to spend this Saturday with our good pal, Jeff Simmons, at Real Jeff Simmons. How are you doing this morning, Jeff?
I'm good, man. It's starting to get some news again. We're starting to get some content to watch. It was kind of bleak there from like the football content standpoint for a bit for that month. Yes. And I was kind of joking with you that I was like trying to like relive the draft as long as I could, like to its almost sad levels where like I'd watch like other streams. I even rewatched our streams a couple times. Just like I never get to like watch our draft coverage. So I watched the day two and some of day three. I didn't get through all of day three. And it was just like, God, this is kind of pathetic. I need to find something to do. And so, yeah, all the OTAs are kicking back up and you guys get to go down there this week. So I'm always excited to have more football content to take in.
Yeah, well, I think I mentioned this on my show before, but I don't know if I talked about it with you. Like this is a great time of year, but it's also this like highly compacted time of year for me. So I have my wife's birthday, the start of May. I have Mother's Day. Then I've got my mom and dad's birthday this past week. Then it's my birthday and Father's Day. Wow. And so it's like, and then we have our anniversary at the end of the month. So it's this crazy time. But Father's Day, it's going to be the first Father's Day for you. Am I right?
It is. We just had our first Mother's Day last month.
That's pretty cool, dude.
It was pretty cool. And first Father's Day coming up next month. And my birthday is in early May. So same kind of a little run for us going on right now.
Well, yeah, you'll see that I've started putting the live chat on the feed so we can watch. People can watch.
So if you saw me laughing, it was because Big Mike said was calling me pretty desperate for. I'll say this, Big Mike. I'm in weird hours right now. I have a almost five month old son. I'm up at weird hours. I go on my YouTube page and some weird stuff comes up. So if I was just doing this all night and not talking to my wife or something, yeah, that would be pretty disgusting. But I got an hour here to kill. So sometimes I just throw on something like that.
I hear you. Well, you know, I don't know, for your Father's Day, I have something to ask you about Father's Day before we get into that. Before I do that, just to give people an idea of the show. So today's show, what we're going to talk about is Jeff. I've asked him, I've given him an assignment to go off and rank where Abe Lucas and Charles Cross are among all the starting offensive tackles in the NFL. We're going to go by the NFC West first, then we're going to broaden out to the NFC, then we're going to talk about the NFL. I have not seen or heard what Jeff's rankings are. I don't know if I'll agree with Jeff's rankings. So we'll have that conversation. I'm really looking forward to it because I think those two players, Jeff, are crucial to the success or failure, or how good this team can be. They're in their, you know, I guess Charles Cross technically is no longer in his contract year since he has fifth year option picked up, but this is a crucial year for both of them and for the team. So I want to talk about that. We've got some news, some 49ers news, some division news we'll talk about. There's some other trade rumblings I want to talk about. So there's a bunch of good stuff to talk about. Before we get there, Father's Day, one last quick thing there. So are you a Costanza wallet guy? Do you have a big, massive wallet? Or what's your wallet name right now?
I have a pretty small wallet, but for my job, I have to, like, for work, like, I take a lot of clients out for work, and I don't have a great system of storing receipts. I have to, like, make sure I keep every receipt I spend on my corporate Amex card. And so there's times towards the end of the month, my wallet does get really bad, and it's just stacked with receipts. I don't have a great filing system right now, and I got, like, random receipts. Like, anytime I take someone out for breakfast or golf or lunch or – by the end of the month, it looks Costanza-like. I'm usually trying to get down, only take a couple cards out and one of the smaller wallet clip because I never have cash on me now. Like I almost never. We only have $1 bills here in Canada, so there's no reason to have cash. So it depends when. I think it depends when you get me.
Well, I used to have a Costanza wallet. It's the point where I couldn't put it in my back pocket because it was giving me back trouble. And I think I told you a while ago, I was hiking and I made the absolutely idiotic decision to leave my coat in my car, and my coat had my wallet in it. And that happened to be the one time my car got broke. They stole my coat, stole my wallet. And so, got a really cool Father's Day I want to share with you and others for anyone to get a really cool option for their dad. So I'm working with Extra Wallet, and this the Extra Wallet. It's the Extra Wallet Pro. They've actually redone it. And one of the cool things with this, I don't know if you've done the ones where you've got the cards that you stick in there, but they're impossible to get out. You have that embarrassing moment. Well, now there's this button on this one, and it pushes up the cards so you can get access to all the cards you want. And it's also got this other really cool thing that would have helped me when I was had my wallet stolen. This is a Find My Wallet card. So it syncs with your iPhone or whatever else you use. And I would have been able to go and track down my wallet and find the people. But for right now, if you go to follow the link in the description of the video, I've got it there. Use code HAWK. You get 50% off that wallet for Father's Day. So it's only going on through June 26th. It's a great deal. It's a great wallet. I've loved it. And I'm never going to lose it. And I'm going to catch the guys that steal it from me next time if that ever happens. So highly recommend it.
So funny enough, I just sent you a picture. It probably makes no sense to you. And it's so timely because I literally went to my parents' house last Sunday. My parents are starting to get a little older. Like, I always watched Seinfeld growing up, and like the way Jerry and George talked about their parents. I'm like, I don't understand. I can't relate to that. Like, I'm very close with my parents. I'm starting to like relate. And so I get to my house, my parents' house on Sunday. We bring their grandson over, and I show up at the front door, and my dad's wallet is just sitting on the front step. Like, I don't even know how that's possible. Like, you have your pockets, they go in through the garage usually. And so I literally just sent you a picture of that. So this actually would be the perfect.
I'm telling you, man, you gotta probably set it up for your dad. But I'm serious. I think this is a really good Father's Day present and a really good wallet. And I love mine. So I figured I'd pass along the deal to other people. All right. So let's get into it. We're gonna get to the rankings in a bit. Before we get there, there is a little bit of news in the division. So the 49ers made what I thought was a very predictable trade. For, you know, kind of low value or low, kind of at the low point of his value, Bryce Huff, edge rusher, formerly of the Jets, went to the Eagles and is now going to be a San Francisco 49er. What did you make of this move?
I didn't like it because it was a pretty smart move. And if you look at their depth chart, one of the things they noticed is just they didn't have a lot of edge rush depth. A lot of it was relying on rookies, especially Mykal Williams, who's not really a proven pass rusher. And Huff was a very logical fit, like you said. I think you tweeted out months ago. His best year was with Robert Saleh. And certain players are just certainly scheme dependent. And you take the guy in the wrong scheme. And I remember last year someone was writing me like, why aren't the Seahawks signing Bryce Huff when he was a free agent? I think they did actually go after him. I didn't think he was a particularly good fit for Mike McDonald because he's been a very poor run defender historically. But as a pass rusher, he had his best years, his contract year with Saleh. And I think I joked, like, is Saleh running the team or is Kyle? Because Saleh's been, like, the one controlling the draft. They kept showing him the draft room, and, like, the owner kept hugging him. And, yeah, I think it was a pretty smart buy-low move. I think they got Philly to eat half the money, and I was annoyed about it. I don't like when the Niners make smart moves, but for a guy they know how to coach in their system to add pass rush depth opposite of Bosa, you got to give him credit for that one.
Yeah. I mean, Bryce Huff's a better version of Leonard Floyd. So I think it's worth kind of acknowledging, you know, he is younger than Leonard Floyd. He is similarly not great as a run defender. And when you talk about him as a pass rusher, I had thought that actually he had had more track record as a pass rusher, but he really had 1 year where he was an excellent pass rusher for the Jets. He had 10 sacks. He had more than 4 sacks in a season other than that 1 year. So it's not like he's been this consistent, you know, dominant edge rusher, but he went to the Eagles and just totally fell flat on his face. So I guess my read of this is Robert Saleh knows the player. He's used him in the scheme. They're going to have to give up like very little, probably a mid-round pick. And now Mykel Williams, they've got someone to rotate. I think it's a really good move for them. I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't know how high the upside is. If he turns out to be a 10 sack guy, it's a huge addition for them. If he is just a rotational edge rusher that gets 4 to 5 sacks, I still think it's a good move for them. I don't really see how this ends up being a bad move for them.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the funny thing I see is all these Niners fans, and I think Lombardi was even doing this, where it was just like, look how much they paid for Leonard Floyd last year, and this is a way player for half the price. And like last year when they got Leonard Floyd, they were all celebrating that move. I think we were the only show that was like, they kind of suck against the run, and I think they're 32nd against the run. So I think Leonard Floyd is a pretty good comp for what he can be in that defense. And yeah, Saleh knows the player, but I think why it's more of a depth move than a ceiling raiser. Like, I think if anything, their backup edge, I think, is Yetur Gross-Matos. I think Huff complements Mykel Williams really well in terms of the things that he does really well, Mykel isn't good at. And I think it's a really good, just he'd probably better player on third down than on first down. But I don't think it like changes the ceiling of the Niners. But to me, it's like just getting a quality depth free agent. It's a smart move. They have more depth now, but I'm not like scared of the Niners because they got that player, but I think it's an objectively smart move to add a player the coach knows pretty well.
There's another team that is potentially going to be making a move. And I think this June 1st, which is tomorrow, is a bigger date than people realize, Jeff, because trades post June 1st have different salary cap ramifications. So starting like this next week, I think we're going to see some trades, especially of guys that have larger contracts that teams want to push the salary cap hits into future years. And so making that move will make a big difference. Jalen Ramsey is a guy that the Rams have talked a lot about. And you and I separately came to the same conclusion that he might make some sense for the Seahawks. I'm curious, like, where you're at right now on Jalen Ramsey. Do you care if he goes to the Rams? Do you think it would be a good move for the Seahawks? Like, where are you at there?
I still think he's a pretty decent to pretty good player. And I would care if he went to the Rams. When I was doing the NFC West drafts, one of the things that kind of struck me was their corner group is not particularly intimidating. And they had such a good front, and their safeties are pretty good that it hasn't made a huge difference. But I think just one of the things that they don't really have a lot on their defense in the back seven is just like that guy who's going to talk, and like he has the alpha personality. And look, he's not the player that was when they won the Super Bowl. He's a diminished player. He's in his 30s now. But I still think he's a particularly good corner. And for the Seahawks, I actually think he would be a really good fit. And I think because of his contract, I don't think the cost would be high at all. I think the big thing for these teams is, and I think the Rams have alluded to this, it's a lot about the money. And the June 1st date is really important. It goes from like Dolphins taking like an $8 million hit to them like clearing $10 or $12 million. Mm-hmm. And so that's a huge change. But for the opposing team, a lot comes down to how much money Miami is willing to eat. And that impacts, if you're the Seahawks and you have all this extra cap room, if you're not going to do that Trey Hendrickson trade or something of that nature, I think Ramsey makes a lot of sense because A, they need another corner. I'm not sure how comfortable I am just trotting out Josh Jobe, even though he played particularly well last year. I think I'd be far more comfortable with one of the other veteran options. And what I like about Ramsey, he just has a kind of attitude that not a lot of guys in the Seahawks have, where he's going to talk his shit and he's going to do it. And like Witherspoon talks a lot, but he doesn't have just like the history of what he's done. I think you put Ramsey in that defense with those two guys. And you said yesterday in your show, Ramsey's a really good run player too. And so I think because of the acquisition costs, the only thing that really you're taking on is money. And over the next year or two, they have a good amount of room to get money. So I would be, usually I don't like the idea of trading for someone in their 30s who's declining, but I think because of how the offseason's gone, they're in this unique situation where they can be a buyer here, much more so than the Trey Hendrickson, which has some kind of red flags based on some of the moves they've made before. So if the Rams got him, I wouldn't be happy. I think it adds a lot to their back end of their defense, which is kind of a hole for them right now. And for the Seahawks, I think that would really round out the cornerback group, make them from a good group to potentially the best in the league.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any concern, Jeff, about inserting a personality like Jalen Ramsey into that secondary room where Devin Witherspoon is starting to kind of move forward? Julian Love's moving forward. You've kind of got, you know, you've got a young, impressionable Nicky Minwori. You know, is Jalen Ramsey the right person to add to that room?
So here's the great thing. They have two people in their building who would answer that question. Ernest Jones and Cooper Kupp would know everything there is to know about Jalen Ramsey. Ernest Jones was in Mike McDonald's office when they did their draft interview with. So if that's Mike McDonald's, like Dwight Schrute, a right hand man right now, that's, you have the resources. It'd be kind of funny if the Seahawks ended up with Ramsey, Kupp, and Ernest Jones on their team, but I have those resources at my disposal. Go and see, like, they would know, they've been around that guy for a long time. Sure, there's concerns. I don't know a ton about, like, what kind of personality he has. I see what comes out on the field, and how funny would it be week two against DK Metcalf, all of a sudden you throw Jalen Ramsey into that matchup. Mm-hmm. And so, from what I've seen, in that he's been a particularly good teammate and a good leader, and I know he's fallen out of favor with a couple franchises, but some of that's been over money or point of his career now in Miami. You have the resources to answer that question. And so if they got the green light from a Kupp or Ernest Jones, who are probably two of the best leaders, characters on their team, then you go ahead and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it passes the football test for me, for sure. I think it makes it's the right thing. The cost of acquisition passes that test for me. It gets lower marks on the salary and the impact to the cap, but I think you can get out of the deal after the year and probably be fine in that situation. And the only other thing I have some question about is I do feel like there's something special brewing in terms of the chemistry on the team right now. It just feels carefree. It feels enthusiastic and joyful. And you put in like a surly veteran who maybe is a diva. I'd hate for them to upset the apple cart. So that's my one little cautionary piece. But you mentioned the Trey Hendrickson thing. You mentioned the show I did yesterday where I talked about, you know, if you trade for one, which one do you do? And then I ended at the end, I was like, well, why not both? You know, you could actually move Noah Fant potentially if they're going to trade Jonnu Smith in Miami and they might need a tight end. You trade Noah Fant, get back Jalen Ramsey, clear some cap space in doing so, at least for the Noah Fant part of it. And then a move for Trey Hendrickson. And you and I have been very dead set against this. I'm not as against it as I was before I went through and did the show and kind of looked at things more detail. Like, tell me, I sense you're still very like opposed to it. Tell me why.
It's just, I don't typically like making moves like this. What you talked about, it's just going to change the dynamic of the whole team financially, because not only, I think because of some of the contracts that went out this offseason, Crosby, Miles Garrett, Parsons is about to sign. You're looking at like potentially like $33 to $35 million for a player who has not been on the team. And with so many guys coming up who are about to get paid, it's not always great to put a guy ahead of all those guys. And we saw that happen with Percy Harvin back in the day, but I just don't think the Seahawks are there yet in their development. I think that they were a little more secure on offense and we had a more clear idea of what they were on offense. This would be the move for me 100% because I really like Trey Hendrickson. I think the Seahawks are building something here. I think they have like the core, the good pieces to kind of set the tone on offense, and the defense we're hoping takes that step this year. On the other part of my brain, like, they are one pass rusher away from being really good. And I've said it many times, they don't have that A1 pass rusher. If Trey Hendrickson was paid already, that would be an obvious move to me. The thing that would make me nervous is having to pay a guy who might be having, like you said, the Patrick Kearney and some of the other things, paying him. It's like buying a stock at the top of its peak, and that's not the best time to buy a stock. And to me, that's kind of just the whole evaluation there. If they have to pay him, my whole equation would change. I could deal with the age concerns. I can deal with the other thing that kind of sits in my head, though, is Boye is a little tricky because Boye has to be paid next year, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I don't know how much you mentioned that yesterday. I kind of skimmed through it, but Boye is going to be getting probably $20 million a year in an extension. Mm-hmm. And so if we look at like if Boye was on a rookie contract, that would become really hard to swallow if you're trading 3 years of club control. But Boye, if it's on next year, if you want to keep him, and I wouldn't sign him yet, I'd want to see how the season goes, would be a $20 million player, I believe, at this point. If he has a breakout year, that could be a $27 million player, $25 million player. All of a sudden, maybe you're like, well, maybe you take the guy who got 17 and a half sacks. But at this point, I'm still a little uncomfortable with it because I still think the Seahawks are not quite there where you're at a point where you make a move like this.
Yeah. Yeah. I found myself thinking like, man, it's not crazy unrealistic that they would be able to off both deals. I think they can make that work salary cap wise. And I think the cost of acquisition is not going to be as high as maybe other people think, but I actually gave people the choice yesterday of a trade for Hendrickson where you're talking about Boye Mafe and maybe a fifth round pick or something like that for Hendrickson, or Uchenna Nwosu and a second. And it was back and forth. You know, people went back and forth. I don't know exactly. I think it ended up people were more in favor of the Uchenna Nwosu deal.
Really?
I don't know. I value those picks quite a bit, and second round picks are very valuable. So anyway, I don't know. I think it's probably not going to happen for a bunch of different reasons. And I think I also heard somebody, I think it was Brock and Salk, were talking about, oh, well, if let's just wait. I think Brock was like, let's just wait till Jalen Ramsey gets cut because the Dolphins clearly don't want to pay him. If he gets cut, he's going to the Rams. That's where he wants. Like, he's familiar with that place. He knows that he's not going to pick Seattle over L.A. Like, players don't do that unless the Seahawks offer him some kind of crazy money difference, which I doubt they will do. So you really should make the trade if you want him. You should trade for him so you can control his destination. I think that might be. I mean, do you have any interest in like Jair Alexander, or like is he a guy that is an alternative that you'd be interested in?
No, because if he's been an even stranger character in terms of like if you have concerns about potentially dropping Ramsey in Alexander, you're going to have to get him. You're probably going to have to take on some money, but he's had a really weird thing with that locker room where he like didn't show up to a game and they had to bench him. And Ramsey, I think, fits from just – I think his attitude is so much different than Jair Alexander. I love like the kind of attitude Ramsey has is a lot like what Sherman had. Like, I'm going to kick your ass and I'm going to tell you about it.
Mm-hmm.
I love those players. And I think the Seahawks kind of lack those guys. They have a lot of nice guys. Witherspoon has some of that to him. But I think they kind of lack that. And that's where I think the fit for Ramsey at that outside cornerback. Again, if you want to take a good defense and make it great, I think having someone like that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
I think Jair Alexander is younger and certainly more talented, but I think there's way more wild card potential there. And Green Bay's in a similar development. The fact that they want to move on is a lot about money, but I think they're unsure what to do with them. And there's a reason I don't think people have traded for him. So no, there's not a lot out there. I agree with you. If you want Ramsey, you got to trade for him. Like, there's a lot of teams with cap room out there, and there's a lot of more teams he'd probably think are closer to competing. I would be okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's going to be one to watch. I think we're going to find out probably in the next few days. And my guess is he will become a Ram. That's what I'm expecting to happen. And I don't want it to happen, but I think that's going to happen.
It sounded a little more skeptical coming out of that. I don't know if that's a negotiating tool to try to get Miami to take on more money, but the last week or so, they've kind of changed their tone a little bit. But again, that might be negotiating through the public.
Yeah. All right. So the main focus of the show, let's get to it, talking about the tackles. And I'll set it up again. I mean, the Charles Cross, top 10 pick, 2022, first round pick for the Seahawks. Abe Lucas, third round pick, same draft. These are two guys that in their rookie years, Jeff, were terrific, like really, really solid rookies. Looked like they'd be the bookend tackles for who knows how long to come. And then Abe Lucas ran into some injuries. Charles Cross had a little bit of injury. Then Charles Cross kind of had a breakout year last year, which you and I had been hoping would happen at some point. It did. And Abe Lucas has, you know, he came back last year. He played, even though he was kind of still rehabbing. And now this whole offseason has just been absolutely crushing his workouts. He looks like he's in fantastic shape, 325 pounds, looks very lean for that. And I look at this tackle duo and I say, I think this could be one of the better tackle duos out there. And they're young and hopefully under club control, you know, when you extend them in the coming year or years. So everyone talks about the offensive line, how bad the Seahawks offensive line is. I wanted to focus on the tackles. Where in the NFC West do you rank the Seahawks offensive tackle starters?
This was a tough one because I went through a whole process and I wrote out all the tackles in the NFC West. And so Abe Lucas is such a projection because, like you said, as a rookie, he looks really good in the first eight games. He starts to hit the rookie wall a little bit. Then he's battled with injuries. And then when he came back last year, he looked a little diminished. And by the end of the year, he looked better. It was a huge improvement. And then I went on Pro Football Focus and I was just, you know, my concerns with Pro Football Focus, but it's good to have them as a kind of a backdrop here. And they had him ranked in the 50s last year for tackles. Funny enough, second last in the league was Stone Forsythe, who played a lot of those games. Second last offensive tackle. So happy he's gone. But I wrote down all the tackles and try to make a projection because like Trent Williams is on there, but he's 37 years old. Grant Cohen has been wondering if he's even going to be on the Niners by the time the season starts. I thought about it. The Rams are pretty solid. The Cardinals are in a similar spot, but with a more just like kind of run-of-the-mill veteran at right tackle. I think with Cross's breakout and Lucas, I'm making a projection that he's going to be healthier. I'm going to say the Seahawks have the best tackle group in the NFC West by the end of the season.
Wow. I love this. And by the way, I should have set this up clearly when you and I talked about it. We're talking about starters only. We're not talking about the full depth chart of this. This is the guys that are projected to be starters. And so you were looking at for the 49ers, Trent Williams and Colton McKivitz. Obviously for the Seahawks, Lucas and Cross. For the Rams, I assume you had Havenstein and Alaric Jackson.
Yep.
And then for the Cardinals, I'm assuming Jonah Williams and Paris Johnson Jr. Yes.
Yes.
Was there a team in that division that was close for you where you're like, I have a hard time putting the Seahawks above this group?
I think all four are close. And that's what made it tricky. Like the Cardinals, I looked at PFF to just say, am I misreading it? I looked at our NFC West draft to see four people with different perspective. Cross was graded as an 81 last year and Paris Johnson was a 77. So they're pretty similar. Cross was a ninth pick, could have easily been sixth. Paris Johnson was sixth pick. Like, I think they're pretty similar. One might be better than the other. I think Cross has been a little bit of a better player so far, what we saw last year. Then Jonah Williams has been a steady veteran. He was a first round pick. I think if Lucas can get back, and I like what I've seen on film, I think the scheme will elevate him. I had them really close. The Rams were right there too. Eric Jackson just got 19 a year in free agency. Everyone thought that was like a value signing. And Rob Havenstein's getting a little older though. People think this might be his last year. I'm making the projection that he's probably going to decline a little bit, but the Rams group was right there too. And then San Francisco has a Hall of Famer at left tackle, but I don't know what kind of player he's going to be this year. That's what I mean. Colton McKivitz has been a bad player at right tackle. So I think the Seahawks with Cross stepping forward, his body looks even better so far.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making the projection that the Seahawks end up with the best right tackle between Jonah Williams and Havenstein and McKivitz. That's where I came to that.
Yeah. And you know, we have our fun troll who I don't know if he's on here today, but he always points out that Charles Cross had, you know, gave up more pressures than all these other guys. Charles Cross had 724 pass block snaps last year.
Yeah, that was
the only other tackle in the division that had more than 600 was Colton McKivitz for the 49ers. He had 645. So Charles Cross from a pass blocking efficiency standpoint was very good. They just passed the ball so much. He had so many pass block snaps, but yeah, he still gave up some pressures. He wasn't perfect. He's not Walter Jones. Like he's not that shut down left tackle, but he also emerged as a run blocker. And I think he is, other than Trent Williams, he is the best run blocking left tackle, I think, in the division. And this year, I think he is a ideal fit for what they're doing in a zone blocking scheme. I think he's going to get the best coaching he's ever got. And I think it's going to be a fantastic fit for him. And that the thing for that hits it for me, Jeff, is I'm just very, very high on Abe Lucas. I'm like higher than most people probably are on Abe Lucas. I think Abe Lucas should be the best right tackle in this division. I think he is absolutely more talented than Colt McKivitz. I think he is more talented than Rob Havenstein. I think he's more talented than Jonah Williams. And I think it's just been an injury issue. And I think he's going to be in the best shape he's ever been in. He's going to get the best coaching he's ever had. I think he's going to be an app. I mean, remember when he was just pancaking guys like yeah. every single game? Like, I think that's we're going to get that version of Abe Lucas this year. I think it's a huge game changer.
And that's why I made the projection. I think Cross specifically in this scheme, where last year that scheme was so hard on offensive linemen, and Cross still had his best year. And then some of the pictures we've seen from OTAs, Cross's body's filled out a little more. And we saw it with John Benton and that crew, what they did just to elevate players who have been pretty good. A lot of them had career years last year in the same system. So I think Cross in the zone blocking Shanahan offense, people worry that he's finesse or anything like that. I think he's a really good fit. And Lucas, when Lucas is like, if you remember like Brian Baldinger's videos from his preseason, and the first couple games of the year that year before they kind of hit the rookie wall, like Lucas was better as a rookie than Cross was. And Lucas looked like one of the best players on the team that year. Mm-hmm. And so I make the projection that in this scheme, with this coaching, with better health, a full offseason, and the right tackles in the division aren't particularly good. Like Havenstein's been a solid player. Jonah Williams stabilized them a little bit last year, but I think Lucas's ceiling compared to the rest of these guys is not particularly close.
And to give you an idea, like Charles Cross last year went from he had been a 67.6 graded player by PFF in 2023 to an 82.5. And so if you look at Abe Lucas, his rookie year, Abe Lucas was a 68.5, and he's been injured and kind of making back. There's no reason, as far as I'm concerned, Jeff, that the expectation shouldn't be that Abe Lucas is an 80-plus graded Pro Bowl-level right tackle this year. That's my expectation for him.
Yeah, it just comes down to health, and we haven't seen him been healthy since his rookie year, and he's in his fourth year now. This is a huge year for his career. The contract's coming up, and he looks in great shape. He had a great offseason. He's had time to build up his body. All of it comes down to health and durability. This is a massive year for his career.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting. Like as far as the division, you have him number one as the projection of the division. I think I like that you said by the end of the year. I think if it was right now, I think it would be hard to not still have Trent Williams and Colton McKivitz over him, just because Trent Williams is the best tackle of the generation. He is aging. He might not be playing by the end of the year. He is definitely in decline. There's no doubt. So I don't hate that. I think that's the only one that gives me a little bit of pause. I think you're right. It's kind of fascinating. I think Alaric Jackson's a really solid player. I think he's a lower end version of what the Cardinals and Seahawks have at left tackle, young, decently athletic left tackle who's not elite but good. And then Paris Johnson and Jonah Williams. I think Paris Johnson certainly had a big jump last year. He's very talented. I'm not as big on Jonah Williams, and I've seen him get abused a little bit, but he's a decent player. So I don't hate that. So let's broaden out. That was the NFC West. Let's now go out to the NFC, the whole conference, and tell me, Jeff, how'd you approach this? What was your process? And where'd you end up with the Seahawks?
So what I did is, again, I wrote down all of the tackles by division. And what I tried to find is, A, do they have an all-pro player in their prime? Or do they have a Pro Bowl player in their prime? And then I compared it with Pro Football. And Mike Clay has a really cool position-by-position ranking for team. He ranks the entire offensive line. But if you go on like Mike Clay from ESPN's file, he literally writes out the projected starting offensive line 1 to 5, and he ranked them all, and you can kind of see and cross-reference based on my eye test, based on my reputation. So there's some that were really hard to figure out. Like New Orleans has Talize Fuaga and Kelvin Banks, who was just a top 10 pick, never played a game in the NFL. Like that could project as like a really cool group, but Fuaga was a rookie left tackle, now switching over to right tackle. I think like if we were projecting 3 years out, that might be one of the top groups, but I have the Seahawks. Let's see.
Well, let's talk. Tell me about your top groups.
So there's come that like the Seahawks would not be close with. So Philadelphia has, by all indications, the best tackle group in the league. Pro Football Focus have been 2 of the top 4 tackles last year. Jordan Mailata and Lane Johnson's like a first ballot Hall of Famer at this, and he's still peaking. Mailata is one of the best left tackles in the league, and they've had him. Detroit has Penei Sewell and Taylor Decker. Now Taylor Decker's not kind of the peak that these guys are, but Penei Sewell is the best right tackle in football. And if I was starting a team with like a tackle right now, he would be in my top 1 or 2. So
yep,
he's up there for me. Minnesota is an interesting one because Kristen Darrisaw has been a better player than Charles Cross. He's been graded pretty highly. He's coming off a serious injury. And Brian O'Neill is similar to Lucas, I think, in terms of like upside and ceiling. He's just been a little bit healthier, even though he was banged up last year. So I would have the Vikings ahead of them. Tampa Bay is one I had ahead of them. Again, I hold Tristan Wirfs in really high esteem. Like he's up there with Sewell in terms of like the best tackles in the league. And then they have a guy, Luke Gudecki, who's a second round pick. He's been a healthier version of what we think Lucas can be. So that group's pretty good. A couple other ones that were tricky were, again, I mentioned the Saints. The Giants have Andrew Thomas, who's been banged up, and he's been top 10 pick. He's been really good. But they have like Jermaine Illuminar, who's kind of just like the Jonah Williams there.
Yeah.
And then the other one that I found tricky was Washington, because they got Tunsil, who's coming off a down year, but he's still been a really good all-pro type Pro Bowl player. And then they drafted Josh Connerly, but they also have Brandon Coleman there. They're all switching positions. So I don't know what Josh Connerly is as a right tackle. We were concerned about him in Seattle. Is he a guard? That one and New Orleans were tough. So I had Seattle. Oh, the other one I liked ahead of Seattle was Green Bay, even though I think Seattle's personnel might be better. But Rashid Walker and Zach Tom is kind of like the right tackle version of Charles Cross, just like a young guy. He's getting better. He's been a little more stable. And then Rashid Walker has just been a solid player. Nothing crazy. He was like a 4th round pick, and they've done really well there. I had the Green Bay group ahead of Seattle.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, of those, a lot of those make sense to me, Jeff. I think the Bucs are one that if things go well for the Seahawks this year, I think they can be in the same category. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Charles Cross enters a similar tier as Tristan Wirfs. He's a very good left tackle, but I think that's a guy that Charles Cross could realistically reach. And I definitely think that Abe Lucas can get there with Luke Gudecki. So I think that's right. I think it's a fair one to kind of debate. Green Bay, I'm not as high on Rashid Walker. So like I do like Zach Tom quite a bit. And I think the Packers just always get good tackle play. But if you were to tell me you could trade tomorrow, Charles Cross and Abe Lucas, and you get back Zach Tom and Rashid Walker, I would say no way. No way.
Yeah. In terms of pure talent, Seattle's guys have much more upside.
Yeah.
It's that system. They just somehow always have reliable offensive line play. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. So I'm trying to separate that out a little bit in terms
okay, so if we're separating that out, yeah, I would agree with you. I would have Seattle's guys. The interesting one would be like the Saints guys.
Well, and that one is, knowing that we're talking about this season and not like the next 3 years necessarily.
That's for Seattle close ahead, yeah.
I mean, I like Kelvin Banks. I like Talize Fuaga. You just don't know what they're like. It's hard for rookies to play well. And yeah. So like the Seahawks have Gray Zabel, but that's not a tackle. But again, I'm going to continue to be cautious about rookie offensive linemen. There aren't many of them that come in and play really well right away. But I agree, that has an interesting upside. The Giants one, like Andrew Thomas, I think is an excellent, like excellent left tackle for sure. He's still young. He's 26. This guy's already had, you know, all pro level play in the past. So I think that's a good one. Although I really don't like the right tackle situation enough to say that it makes up for it. Don't argue about Detroit. I wouldn't argue about obviously Philadelphia. I don't think Washington's close personally. I think obviously Laremy Tunsil is very good, but I think their right tackle situation's a mess. So yeah, it's kind of like where did that leave you in terms of where the Seahawks ranked among the 16 NFC teams?
So I had them fifth. Yeah, I had Philly, Detroit, Minnesota, Tampa, and then Seattle was in a tier I had with Green Bay and just ahead of the other NFC West teams. And Atlanta and Carolina are pretty close. Atlanta has Jake Matthews and Caleb McGarry.
Yeah, that was one I was curious about.
That them in Seattle, I had them almost identical. I just had Cross, I think, because of his age. As Jake Matthews has been in the league for a long time now, it feels like. So I'm making a projection there. Carolina is similar because Ike Ekwonu was in the same draft and he broke out last year with Dave Canales a little bit. And they have Taylor Moten at right tackle, who's been pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
But I had them fifth. I think that's a jump for sure. But the only ones I had bolded were Philly, Detroit, Minnesota, Tampa.
I think it's fair to say those are the only ones that are certainly better than what the Seahawks have.
Yeah,
I think Minnesota is an underrated crew. I think Brian O'Neill is not well known, but it is an excellent right tackle. Christian Darrisaw was injured last year for most of the year, but is an excellent left tackle. You know, if again, to the trade test, like if you could trade those guys for what you have now, I would take those two over the Seahawks players. So I think that's a fair one. But that's interesting. I mean, were you surprised a little bit where you ended up?
Yes, because there's not a lot of bad ones, number one. And there's a lot in like that middle tier of Atlanta, Carolina, Green Bay, Washington, all the NFC West. It's very hard to separate that group. And I just think Seattle with two ascending guys, they were really one of the only teams I thought with two ascending guys. And that's how I judge rosters. I like to try to project what they're going to do moving forward, not what they've done the year before. But if you ask seven different people how to rank those seven teams, and I think in the same tier, some might have Seattle seventh. So it's really tricky. The whole kind of second tier of offensive tackles, or even third tier, are very closely bunched.
Yeah, it's an interesting piece. So let's broaden out to the full NFL now. How did this process go for you?
So the same big takeaway is the tackles in the NFC are certainly better than the tackle groups in the AFC. There's a lot weaker groups in the AFC. There's a lot less strength. There's a couple really, really good groups in the NFC, but I found like the overall talent. And you won't find that in a lot of position groups, especially a quarterback. But there were certainly, like, Miami has Paul and Austin Jackson. Like, that would be, like, the worst one in the NFC. New England has Will Campbell and Morgan Moses. That would be one of the worst. Cleveland has an aging Conklin at right tackle. And DeJuan Jones is playing left tackle. The big guy that we liked a couple years ago. Jacksonville has Walker Little and Anton Harrison, which Mike Clay ranked as the worst tackle group in the league. Tennessee paid Dan Moore, who's a backup, $21 million with J.C. Latham. Like, there's a lot more meh to bad groups at right tackle. Pittsburgh has Broderick Jones and Troy Fautanu coming off an injury. Mm-hmm. That's a really tough one to grade. Like, there's the not Chiefs a lot of...
Even?
Are, yeah, the Chiefs have
Jalen Moore, like
Jalen
like,
Moore and an injured Josh Simmons with Juwan Taylor. Vegas has DJ Glaze and Colton Miller, who's been really good going through a contract holdout. Houston has Cam Robinson and Tytus Howard with your buddy from the draft, our Ursary. Like, there's not a lot of great groups. There's a couple that were like clearly better than Seattle. But I found like the NFC, Denver has a really good tackle group. Garrett Bowles, Mike McGlinchey has been a flawed player, but like you would just take him because of the floor. And he's been really good since Sean Payton got there relative to what he's been in the past. The Chargers have Rashawn Slater and Joe Alt. So that's like a Philly level tackle group. Slater was one of the highest PFF players. And Joe Alt was like, Joe Alt would have been the fourth overall pick in this draft. The Jets have a really cool one brewing with Olu Fashanu and Armon Membu. I think by the end of this year, that's going to be one of the best. That's going to be like Chargers level. We're both very high on Membu. I thought Fashanu was good, but not great as a rookie, but that one's really good. And one who may not be better than Seattle talent-wise, but they've played really well, is Buffalo. Deion Dawkins and Spencer Brown have been a really good combo. PFF was not high on Deion Dawkins last year. He actually had to search pretty low to find him. But I think that group is better than what Seattle has. But then there's like Baltimore, who has Ronnie Stanley and Roger Rosengarten. Like, I don't know if that's better. Indianapolis has Bernard Raymond, who's been a solid, graded player. I don't know the ton about him. And then Braden Smith, who's coming off a pretty severe mental health kind of season. There's a lot to project what he's going to be. And then outside of that, there's Denver. And not much else. So I found the AFC much easier to grade out versus the NFC.
I think the Colts, I mean, if people read the article on Braden Smith and the kind of unique OCD-ish kind of mental health issue he went through, it was really, really outstanding article. Highly, highly recommend. I can't remember where it was posted, but really, I think maybe it was in the Indianapolis Star, if I remember right. But either way, that guy's been a Pro Bowl, near all pro level tackle, and then he had just mental health issues last year. Bernard Raymond is not as well known, but is also a Pro Bowl, all pro level tackle, you know, young. And so I think the Colts tackle group to me is more proven and already has demonstrated a very high ceiling. So I think I'd have them slightly above the Seahawks. Maybe solidly above. Hard to say, but I think I'd probably have them above. Where did you end up with the Seahawks in the full NFL list?
I had, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I had 6 teams in the, I had them 11th.
11th overall.
Yeah.
And who were the 10 teams that you had above again?
I had Chargers, Bills, I took the Jets, I took the Colts, I took Denver, I took Philly, Detroit, Minnesota, and Tampa.
The Jets, I can't get there with you, man. That's a huge projection. That's a huge projection.
Yeah, I like that group. I think like 2 top 10 level guys. I think they're going to be really good.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Fashanu was not that impressive last year. Not quite bust level, but I didn't think he was that great. He is always a finesse left tackle. He was much more of a pass protection tackle. He had very little to offer in the run game. One of the things that Charles Cross, I thought that's what Charles Cross was going to be. And he's demonstrated he's actually a pretty effective run blocker. So I think when you take run blocking into account, I don't think Fashanu is anywhere near Charles Cross. And then when you look at Membu, I mean, I love,
that's the prank. I love
Membu.
Yeah. That's,
he's also a rookie, and I think it's going to be rough in New York for a little while. Would I trade Abe Lucas for Membu? 100%. I would. I'm not going to lie. I think Lucas might, you know, be as good, you know, as things progress, but Membu is a guy that's got a super high ceiling. I just, this season, I can't see those guys coming particularly close to the Seahawks pair.
Yeah, no, I get that perspective. I'm trying to figure out who's like the group who I would trade for. That's the tackle group. I think I'd be almost most excited of like the young groups that to have.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to hear your thoughts on it and how you came to these decisions. You know, we kind of debate about 2-3 teams, but I think we're largely on the same page. Did you have the Colts above?
I did have the Colts above.
Yeah. Okay. I have the Colts above.
That was one where I'm like, there's so many in the same tier between like Atlanta, Carolina, Rams, Green Bay. So I went to like PFF, and PFF's been high on Raymond for a number of years. Braden Smith has been a really good right tackle, but I think when you consider like there's a lot of uncertainty at both right tackle spots, like Raymond's body of work. I mean, Braden Smith's body of work versus Lucas, I think you have to take him.
Yeah, I agree. Were you surprised how high the Seahawks were, you know, relative to other tackle groups?
Yeah. Yeah, but I've never felt concern this offseason about the tackles. It's been the other three spots. I think that's really been, I think I've come on your show several times, been like, tackle's one of the strengths of this team. But I was surprised when I wrote out all those different tackles that I felt better about them than some of these other ones. But the gap is not big. Like, again, there's 7 or 8 teams that you ask 10 different people, you're going to get 10 completely different answers. So a little surprised, but I think they're in a good spot tackle-wise. I remember my high excitement out of that 22 draft just being like, they looked so bleak at tackle going into that draft, and they hit 2 in the same draft. And they haven't really had them both hit at the same time other than like the first 8 games of that rookie year. But I was really excited about that position group, and I still like both players. I still think both players in this system could be really good. So maybe 11th's a little high based on their production so far and the uncertainty of Lucas, but I'm making a projection that they're going to be good this year.
Yeah. Jeff, what has to happen for Abe Lucas to get an extension? Like, how good does he have to be to get an extension from the Seahawks?
Well, number one thing is he has to be durable. Number one, if he's constantly recurring with knee injuries and he's banged up and they're not sure when he's going to play, that makes it really hard to pay him. And I think he has to be an above average right tackle. If he can be healthy and be an above average right tackle with flashes of being like an 80 level player,
mm-hmm.
I think that's where it is. Because you can't go into the wilderness into trying to find a right tackle when they still need to try to find a center, potentially another right guard. I think creating another hole on your offensive line is just a bold move at this point. So unless he just plays like last year and he's like a 60 level player and he's just a replaceable guy, if he's in like the mid to high 70s for most of the year, I'm definitely extending him.
Yeah, I think it's almost exclusively health and durability. I think that's the thing that they're going to really check out. I'm looking at the free agent list for right tackles next year. Braden Smith of the Colts will be a free agent, supposedly, but he'll be 30 years old. I don't expect him to actually make it to free agency. Taylor Moten, you mentioned, from Carolina, he'll be 32, and he'll be a free agent. Jonah Williams from the Cardinals. Caleb McGarry, another 31-year-old from Atlanta. He's not a bad player, and he might make it to free agency. We'll see. Rob Havenstein from the Rams. Illuminor from the Giants. Larry Borum from the Dolphins. Like, it's not a great list. There's a few guys on there, but I'm not sure most of them will make it. Damari Sawyer from the Chargers, I doubt will make it. So, yeah, I think if Abe Lucas can be there and available, I think he's going to get a bag.
And that's the thing. Like, when I went through my list, I looked at ages. And you just mentioned a lot of the guys, Atlanta, Carolina, there are 30 plus guys that are going to be hitting their third contract. And that's not 10 when people peak. And that's where I'd like Lucas over those guys. Some people might think their body of work is better. But yeah, that's the thing. You start getting into that world and you're going to have to pay premium prices for those guys because of supply and demand. And we've seen what some of the tackles made in this free agent class. Now you put a decent right tackle in free agency. Those guys are going to make big money. And so I'm probably taking a younger player, someone you know, someone still getting better. And so the durability is just such a big deal for him. And whether he can get better and whether he can show the level of play, I think that's one of the more fascinating storylines of the whole season. And I don't think people are talking about it enough.
I think it's also interesting, like, Josh Simmons was drafted pretty high this year with a patella tendon injury. And if there's enough confidence to do that with a player like that, I don't know why there's as much skepticism about a guy like Abe Lucas being able to. He's not like one of these guys. I won't name names. I think you can guess who I'm thinking about on the Seahawks line, who you're like, man, you just put in an offseason, you really work on your body, you could be something. And then they come in and they still look like a sloppy, you know, a little bit of a sloppy physique. Abe Lucas is not that. He's working his ass off and he loves it. He loves working out. He started his own like fitness brand, for God's sake. So I think there's every reason to be confident that Abe Lucas is going to reach his potential. And I think that's one of the most exciting things. If you could pick last year, Jeff, you and I did this show. We said, if you could pick a player to have a breakout year, who would it be? And Charles Cross was like, if not the top of the list, he was the most common guy we came up with.
Yeah.
This year, is that Abe Lucas?
100%. 100%. There's some interesting ones on defense. Like, has Derek Hall broke out already, or can he break out even further?
He could.
Rick Woolen certainly can use the breakout year. He's getting into his contract year. He's been so up and down. But yeah, I think for the long-term health of the Seahawks, if you can have three offensive line spots like secured really well, that changes their dynamic a lot. Because it's been such a black mark on their team for so long. And then you throw Zabel in there, who's going to be a ascending player. Cross took a big step last year. And now you add that third piece. It really stabilizes the building of that group and what this team can be over the next few years to pair with what they have going defensively.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be another conversation for another day. I think it's a question I've been kind of pondering recently, which is like, who is the guy that important to break out? And you know, you kind of say Sam Darnold, but like, setting that aside, I think there's some interesting, you picked on some of the guys that are on my mind, and we'll have to talk about that another time. We've got a super chat here from Corey Coleman, who's been a member for 10 months. Love it. Thanks, Corey, for the support. He says, good morning, fellas. If you could add a former Seahawks defender to complete the current defense, who would it be?
Not easy. I would take
Go ahead.
I would take Richard Sherman.
Oh, yeah.
Again, I think they're like one corner away from being like super elite. And I think his attitude and his smarts with the kind of pieces they have on defense would be so unbelievable. You put Sherman with Witherspoon, Imanyori, Love, and Woolen, like that group would be insane. Most people, I'm guessing, would be a pass rusher or defensive lineman. The Seahawks haven't had that like tier one edge you did on your show yesterday. I'm obviously Bobby in his prime would be amazing beside Ernest Jones on this defense, but I'm curious where you'd go.
I mean, the candidates that come to mind, Kenny Easley, Cortez Kennedy,
yeah,
Michael Sinclair, Jacob. Did I hear you say Jacob Green? I'd go into, obviously, you know, put Lofa Tutupu on the list, Bobby Wagner, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett. Like, there's a lot of guys that you can kind of think of. I mean, Cortez Kennedy was a defensive player of the year, and you could put Cortez Kennedy in his prime in the middle of this defense. I don't think there's anyone else. He's a Hall of Fame player for sure. I think the Sherman one's a good one. I think it's really hard for me to never, like, if you can add Cam Chancellor to any defense, it's hard for me to not want Cam Chancellor on a defense, you know?
Cam is my favorite Seahawk of the last 20 years, and Lofa would probably be second. But there's just something about Sherman's attitude when he was peaking that this team is just like slightly missing. And I feel like that guy with his smarts with Mike Macdonald would be such, because Earl at the time was my favorite. But I think Earl being in the cover three with Pete was like the perfect meshing. I think you put Sherman with the kind of do up front in this defense, I think he would be so unbelievable in Mike McDonald's defense. And I think those two would mesh at such a good level. That's why I picked him. But Cortez Kennedy probably should have come to my mind. Put another defensive lineman like that beside Leonard Williams and Byron Murphy. Like, how do you block that?
Yeah, Yeah, that would be insane. It's a fun thing to think about. Jeff, man, thank you so much for joining, and we'll do this again soon. We did our better or worse on offense. We still got to do that for the defensive crew, but we got some time to do it. Monday is OTAs where I actually get to go. So I'm actually going to get eyes on these guys. We'll get to talk about that a little bit more coming up on Real Hawk Talk next week. Anything else that's on your mind, attention that's you're going to be paying attention to coming up?
Nothing too big. I was going for a haircut this week and see.
You look great.
And I was listening to your show with The Ringer, and I almost drove my car into a ditch. I was so mad listening to that show. And I haven't gotten triggered like that in a while, but Shield was on with Brock and Salk yesterday. They were kind of grilling him a little bit. And so I was happy to see that. And I was kind of taking some jabs. So it was fun. It was fun to get triggered like that. It's been a while for me. And yeah, I didn't agree with everything they said. I think they overlooked some things, but it was fun to get mad again. It's been a while.
It was fun. I was joking with Salk that, like, too often lately I go to bring a guest on a show and they've already got the person planned to be on the side. I had almost reached out to Shield the day after I did the show, and I was like, no, I want to do this other show. And then I hear they're bringing him on. I was like, whatever. I mean, it's not the worst thing to redo. I'll ask different questions, but we definitely are thinking along the same lines.
Yeah, you should have him on.
Yeah. All right, dude. Well, have a great rest of your weekend. For anyone else that's waiting to see, we will have another show tomorrow. I don't know exactly when it will be. I've actually got a very fun morning planned, so I may not be able to do the show in the morning, but I'll let you know what we do. It's possible we won't get a show in tomorrow. I hope we do, but I'll let you know. So keep an eye out. Make sure you click like, click subscribe. And like I said earlier, this is a awesome deal over at Exter. I really recommend you check this out and use code Hawk to get 50% off a Exter Wallet Pro. This is the one that I've got. I love it. And I think the coolest thing in it is this little button. Here, I'll show it this way, this little button. And when you press it, pushes up your card. So if you've ever had those, like, those little small wallets like the carbon fiber wallets, I've had those. I love those. You have that embarrassing moment when you're at the checkout stand and you're fumbling through, they don't take Apple Pay and you're trying to get the right card or you're trying to get to an ATM, whatever it is, having that button that pushes the cards up, they're all accessible. Super nice. It's a great Father's Day present. You don't have to think twice about it. So the link is in the description of the video. It's also in chat, and use code Hawk and get 50% off a great product. I think you'll love it. All right, folks, it has been fun hanging out with you on this Saturday. I will see you all as soon as possible. Until then, I'm Brian Emhauser. This has been another episode of Hawk Blog of Mornings. Take care, y'all.